Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
All my memories gather round her. Miner's lady, stranger to blue water.
That's John Denver singing about West Virginia, Miner's Lady, Stranger to Blue Water. It was more than 5 weeks ago that 300,000 people living in and around West Virginia's capital city of Charleston were told not to touch the water coming out of their taps. A coal washing chemical had spilled into the Elk River just above the region's main water treatment plant. It was okay to flush the toilets, the state advised, but residents should not drink it, not cook with it, and not bathe in it. That advisory was lifted within about a week, but doubts about the water safety persist in a big way. Part of the problem is that not much at all is known about the health effects of the chemical. And so now the water emergency has turned into a water standoff for some, with uncertainty about when and if things are going to get back to normal. And on top of all that, there was another additional spill last week of a coal slurry into one of the capital city's creeks that ran into another river. Ken Ward Jr. has been following all of this at the state's paper, the Charleston Gazette. For years, he's covered the environment, the coal industry, and the chemical industry in the region. Ken Ward, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Ken, today is February 17th. The chemical spill from Freedom Industries was reported on January 9th. How much of that spill is still in Charleston's water supply?
Well, we don't know. The testing that's been done by the water company in the state has been done at the water treatment plant and at hydrants and other publicly accessible locations. What's just now getting started is actual testing of water that people would really use, meaning testing from their taps in their homes. And the state, the administration, Governor Tomlin here was kind of drug kicking and screaming into that testing, in part by the public and the media, and people just not trusting the testing that was done not inside homes. So we'll be waiting to see what those results show as they start to go out and test some sample of homes.
So we don't know yet what levels are still present in people's home water supplies. What is known about this chemical, crude MCHM, and its health effects?
Really very, very little, and that's not unlike the majority of the chemicals that are used in our society. The EPA has had testing done on a very, very few of them. This particular chemical, the Centers for Disease Control kind of threw together a health screening level of one part per million kind of on the fly. The guy from the CDC who did it told me it took him less than an hour to put together, and it was really based on one study that exposed rats to this chemical. And so we don't know very much about what this stuff will do to you or at what levels.
And that's one of the more striking details of your reporting that sticks with me, that the levels that the public have been told to look out for is based on one study of rats.
That's true. And, you know, again, what this is kind of laid bare for policymakers and for the chemical industry is that's really the case with so many chemicals. You know, chemicals in our society today are innocent until they're proven to harm us. I think most people probably didn't know that. And people here certainly were surprised to know that no one could really tell them exactly what this stuff will do, and the thing that's also kind of striking about it is, you know, the intro there mentioned kind of a water standoff, and the standoff here is really between the political leadership, most of the political leadership of the state, mm-hmm. and the public health officials that those political leaders have appointed, who insist that the water is usable, and many members of the public who say, wait a second, this stuff still doesn't smell right. It has this black licorice smell to it when I turn it on, especially from my hot water and in my shower. And I think West Virginians, contrary to what people believe, are pretty smart people, and the notion that they're that the water coming out of their tap ought to smell like black licorice isn't one that people are taking very kindly to.
Listeners, if you're from West Virginia and have been following this story, call in with your questions, 212-433-9692. I know for me, Charleston, West Virginia is my hometown. Talking to my parents, my dad is back drinking the water. My mom's decided she'll drink bottled water until their last two flats run out, and then she'll go back to drinking. If you have questions about what this means for other parts of the country as far as chemical regulation, call with those questions as well, 212-433-WNYC. Ken, you were talking about the standoff between the political officials and public health officials and the public. But first, I want to get a sense of how this has affected the region. I mean, what happens when a metropolitan area loses faith in the safety of its water supply for more than a month?
Well, what we have on that is really sort of anecdotal information. You know, it certainly would be interesting if somebody is kind of polling on this and get some real scientific data, but certainly I was at two different grocery stores over the weekend in two very different parts of the capital city here, and both of them had very long empty aisles where their bottled water used to be, and you see a lot of people buying that, and sort of a wide variety of restaurants from places that are considered kind of more artsy, kind of in the East End portion of our city, that they're advertising their use of bottled water, and then more kind of down-home chain places like Tudor's Biscuit World are advertising that they're using bottled water to cook with. And, you know, when you go out to restaurants, you hear people asking, are you still using bottled water? So there certainly is some continued level of concern from a lot of people, though there are certainly others that I know who are going along with what the government has said.
What regulatory failures preceded this spill from the Freedom Industries storage tank? Who should have been watching here and who wasn't?
Well, lots of people in the government should have been watching, and the water company should have been watching, and none of them really were. A whole variety of laws, from the Safe Drinking Water Act to the emergency response laws, required agencies to consider the fact that you had a chemical storage tanks a mile and a half upriver from a drinking water intake, and they should have, number one, inspected this facility once in a while to see if their tanks were in good shape. They should have, the state and local and federal officials should have planned for this sort of eventuality, this possibility. One of the things we were told was that the water company didn't really know what this stuff was and didn't initially have any way to test for it to see if it was in the water, you know, and that, which suggests that they never bothered to talk to their direct upstream industrial neighbor to see what they had there and maybe have developed that test ahead of time. The state and local emergency response officials knew this stuff was there. The company filed an inventory saying it was there, but yet nobody had ever bothered to really do any research ahead of time to see how dangerous it was. And while the State Department of Environmental Protection had done some inspections of the site based on odor complaints from residents saying they smelled this licorice smell, apparently no one from the DEP ever bothered to go take a look at the tanks and see if they were in good shape or not.
And that's the state agency. So you mentioned their local, state, and federal agencies, and that's been one of the things that's been difficult for me to pin down is where to look for the political response. I want to play a piece of tape from Senator Jay Rockefeller during an interview with NPR last week. First, he told them you couldn't pay him to drink the water in Charleston, West Virginia right now. And then he said this.
West Virginia as a state, traditionally, I'm very sorry to say, has been rather bad at enforcing regulations. People have the view, many people have the view, particularly those in industry, that if you regulate them, they'll go out of business and people get laid off.
So Senator Rockefeller, the senior senator for West Virginia, went on to call this a travesty beyond description. And I wanted to play this for you, Ken, because, you know, Jay Rockefeller has represented the state at various levels of government for nearly five decades in one office or another. But he singled out state legislators in particular, calling on them to step up and tighten regulations. Where are you looking for the political response?
Well, I think the political I think we should be looking for the political response at all levels, because all levels had responsibility here. And due respect to Senator Rockefeller, who's been very strong in his statements and has both publicly and behind the scenes been pushing for better answers about this. You know, when Senator Rockefeller first ran for governor many years ago, he was opposed to strip mining and lost. And so the next time he ran for governor, he decided he would be in favor of strip mining. And now Senator Rockefeller is very close to retiring. It's reasonable I think many people find it helpful that Senator Rockefeller is making these strong statements now. But as Senator Rockefeller himself has said, you know, this is kind of the way things have been done in West Virginia for a long time. You know, at the state house here in Charleston, on the state level, we have a bill that's making its way through the legislature that would require some new sorts of inspections and integrity testing of above ground storage tanks. But the bill was drafted in large part based on recommendations from industry lobbyists who had a closed door private meeting with Governor Tomlin's staff in order to. So they could make suggestions about the bill, and the environmental community wasn't given that opportunity. Hmm. And last week we had a legislative hearing where the Department of Environmental Protection, the state agency that would enforce this legislation, was asked to explain a bunch of provisions of the bill, and DEP officials were really unable to do so. And kind of what we're seeing is that the way things have been done for so many years here, and not just here, but many places, is kind of meeting up with the reality of what can happen when regulatory enforcement isn't really taken very seriously.
And you mentioned Senator Rockefeller's retirement. There's an open Senate seat, U.S. Senate election, a Democrat and a Republican lining up to go at each other on this. Are candidates who need to get elected in West Virginia soon making this an issue, or are they stepping back and watching to see how angry the public gets?
Well, as far as environmental issues, in that particular race, it is likely, as you know, to be Congresswoman Capito on the Republican side and Secretary of State Natalie Tennant on the Democratic side come November. And as best I can tell on environmental issues, that's just simply going to be a contest of which one of them can bash the EPA more and frame themselves as a defender of the coal industry more. You know, Natalie Tennant has made several comments and things about the water crisis and the chemical spill here, but she at the same time continues her EPA bashing, and what I think hasn't necessarily broken through with kind of the ruling class, so to speak, or the political leadership, is the connections between all of these other things about the coal industry and environmental regulation and workplace safety regulation, and their connections to what happened with the chemical spill here. One of the more interesting things we are seeing, though, is you know, as you know from your years living and reporting here, people who live in other parts of West Virginia have deal with water pollution and drinking water contamination problems all the time. This, you know, what 300,000 people around the Charleston area and surrounding communities dealt with and are dealing with is nothing new for people in the coal fields. But now that it's affecting people here in Charleston who have nice white-collar jobs working at law firms and accounting firms and as lobbyists and whatnot, often for the coal industry, it's not somebody else's kids anymore, it's their kids. And really the big political question is, how much will those folks see these connections, and will that change the politics in West Virginia?
And as you described, that seems to still be unfolding. We've got a few questions coming in. Sarah in Brooklyn, what's your question for Ken Ward in West Virginia?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I had a question about this whole issue of lack of knowledge about chemicals that are used in situations like this. And I was wondering, you know, kind of broadly speaking, what would it take to expand the amount of information that's available about these chemicals, both, you know, expand that knowledge for the public, but also for government officials? Would that take federal action? And that's something that it seems like would also be really relevant for us here in New York State as we're trying to evaluate the use of high-volume hydraulic fracturing.
Thanks for your question, Sarah. Ken?
There's an ongoing debate that's been going on for a while in Washington about reform of the Toxic Substances Control Act, known as TSCA, and the one of the more what that in what's being proposed are different levels of reforms and changes in that law that would mandate more testing of chemicals and allowing the development of more information about the toxicity of these sorts of things. You know, one of the more interesting things about that debate is Senator Manchin from West Virginia is one of the people in the middle of that debate, and he has proposed some legislation that the environmental community and some other lawmakers are concerned about because it would in some ways preempt strong action that some states like California have taken on toxic chemicals. And what's kind of ironic about that is that when he's talking about other ways that the coal industry is regulated, Senator Manchin likes to kind of bang his fist on the table and say that and claim states' rights and we don't need the federal government and EPA and we can do this ourselves. But when it comes to toxic chemicals, he wants to preempt the states that are taking stronger action than maybe the chemical industry would like.
Ken Ward, who's paying for the response and cleanup? Freedom Industries has filed for bankruptcy. Who's paying for the response?
Well, it depends on which part of the response you're talking about. The Freedom Industries has declared bankruptcy. They're currently in a reorganization bankruptcy. And if you ask the state DEP or the federal EPA, the regulatory agencies, they say Freedom has committed to financially paying for the remediation of the site. They're going to tear down these storage tanks, empty the storage tanks, tear them down, clean up any contaminated soil, and make sure that there's nothing there that could ever leach out and get into our water again. Freedom has supposedly promised that they have the money and they're going to take care of that. All sorts of other parts of the cleanup, well, we don't know yet. I lost track of how many different lawsuits have been filed against Freedom and against the water company for damages. You know, some people were concerned and have already replaced their hot water tanks. Other people were concerned they might have to replace some of their home plumbing. There's a concern that these chemicals are absorbed into the materials that plumbing, that pipes are made of, and people are worried they might have to replace that. You know, where all that money, if some of that needs to be done, is going to come from, it remains to be seen.
We're getting a few more questions. Amy in Manhattan, what's your question for Ken Ward?
Hi. Well, the one thing I haven't seen mentioned in the cupboard is what, I mean, certainly it should be, they should talk about the effect on the people in the area, but I'm wondering what about wildlife? You know, animals don't have a choice but to drink from the river. You know, they can't use bottled water. Plants with their roots in the river. I don't know if it has a direct effect on them and then on the animals, maybe on them. Can you say anything about that?
Thanks for your question, Amy. So what about that? Can other environmental effects of this particular spill?
Well, it's a little puzzling because there are of the few other studies that have been done of the chemicals involved in the spill, there was some indication of toxicity to aquatic life. But the state Department of Environmental Protection and the State Division of Natural Resources have indicated several times that they have not seen any indication of fish kill or other effect on aquatic life. I have not heard any talk about impacts on other wildlife. This spill occurred about a mile, 2.5 miles up from where the Elk River empties into the Kanawha River, Kanawha being a fairly large river. I've not heard anyone talking about any impacts on wildlife that may rely on either of those for their drinking water.
Thanks for your question, Amy. Nick in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, what's your question about this?
Thank you. You've got approximately 300,000 people exposed to this. Some of the poorest people are going to still be drinking it, and a lot of people are still going to be showering and bathing in it, inhaling the vapors. So you have a lot of exposure, and toxicity is not just short-term immediate poisoning, but long-term carcinogenicity, mutagenicity. Ken, is there any study that you know of that's going to be done longitudinally so that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we have a database of people who have been exposed to this, young children, children, older people, so that we can actually track how many more cancers of the liver, the kidneys, the bladder we get from this, the bones, the blood. There are so many things that this stuff could be causing that we'll never know if we don't capture that data now. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of unwilling guinea pigs to use, and they're human, and this is going to provide a trove of data for the future. We should use it so that in the future, just maybe we'll get some regulations to put a stop to this.
Thanks for your question, Nick. So, Ken, what about that? Is there a longitudinal study at all underway?
There is not as of yet. The studies that are being done so far, the state health department is going back to look at the more than 500 people who sought medical treatment for symptoms that were initially blamed on exposure to the chemicals from the spill. They're going back and doing some examination to see how many of those actually were related to the spill. The state public health officer here has kind of poo-pooed all of that and said that she thinks that it's mostly people who had the flu. That was something that the public did not take very kindly to here. Kanawha County's the local health department director has repeatedly said we need to start a longer-term medical monitoring program of the type that the caller mentions. There's been some effort to amend the legislation that's making its way through the state house to require that sort of a test, that sort of medical monitoring, but that hasn't made its way into the bill yet. So no, thus far that has not that sort of very needed work has not studied. And the caller is correct that the screening levels have been set up saying one part per million is safe, or based on ingesting the chemical, mm-hmm. not inhaling it from your shower. And they were based and this was a short term emergency guideline that was set up for short term exposure, usually based on less than 10 days, certainly not based on 6 weeks or going forward.
And finally, Ken Ward, in 2001, I was looking back, you were profiled in the Columbia Journalism Review. You've been doing this work for a long, long time as an investigative reporter. And you said this about when your report, the objectivity of your reporting is questioned. You said, I think everybody should be able to earn a living so they can take care of their families. I think everybody should have clean water to drink. Nobody ever really wanted to disagree with any of that, but they didn't really like how it manifested itself in stories. That's what you said 3 years ago. So I just wonder, a month into this crisis, do you feel that changing at all in terms of the effect of your reporting?
I certainly have had a number of folks whose livelihoods often depend on the companies whose actions are not whose companies are not always favorably reported on because of mining accidents or spills or whatnot. Many people whose livelihoods depend on those companies who in the past have not really been big fans of the Gazette or my reporting all of a sudden seem to think that we're doing a pretty good job.
All right. Ken Ward, Jr., investigative reporter with the Charleston Gazette. He covers the coal industry, the environment, workplace safety, among other things. Thank you so much for your important work down there, Ken.
Thank you.